The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sesmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm alongside Haley Stasiak filling in for the big guy today. We have a great show for you. James Laurinaitis will be talking to Brad later in the show. He is doing analysis for Fox Sports Arizona for the ASU-UTSA game on Saturday night. Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network answers your fantasy football questions. I know it's that time of year. A lot of drafts are starting to happen here as we approach the start of the football season, and as well as talk to the Lopes. So a lot to get to here. But first, this segment is brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And Haley, I think first and foremost, Diamondbacks up in San Francisco, lose game two of that series. A really tough way to go down after Clay Buchholz gives you a really, really good start.
Well, and not only that, but they didn't win on Monday either behind a pretty good start from Patrick Corbin. He reached a milestone, 200 Ks this season. Mm-hmm. You know, looking at this NL West, we are now probably the closest we've ever been here with Diamondbacks and Rockies tied first place. And the Dodgers now just a half or a whole game back. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, looking at this, none of these three teams are really playing their best baseball right now. Diamondbacks' offense is not producing. Rockies had a close one. And the Dodgers had that really tough stretch, and they've kind of been coming back from that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Diamondbacks team, the offense has to get going. They've been shut out two games in a row now. So in this finale, they're going to try to avoid that sweep, and we'll see what happens.
What do I say on the Diamonds in the Desert podcast that we do every single week, focusing on the Diamondbacks? Every time they go up to San Francisco, what do I say?
I
say that no matter how poorly the Giants are playing, it's tough to get wins at AT&T.
I mean, but that, yeah.
And that is...
That's just general,
The past two games have been just perfectly Giants wins, where it's 2-0 and then 1-0. You know, they shut out a team that's playing had some pretty good offense going into that series, and they were just able to scrape across a couple of
and
runs.
That's exactly it. They just scraped it across because Patrick Corbin gave up his first home run since June 16th on Monday night. And that was a two-run homer. Those were the only runs scored in that game. And then the Giants walk it off in the ninth inning on Tuesday to get the win. Just chance, luck there, almost.
Yeah, so. And you don't want to key in on one play. You know, when you're looking at a loss, there are a lot of contributing factors. But Nick Ahmed trying to score from first after a David Peralta pinch hit single, that's definitely a tough one. You know, trying to stretch that against Brandon Crawford, who has one of the best arms at the shortstop position, delivered a high throw, but Nick Hundley was able to come down and apply that tag. Nick Ahmed ran through a stop sign from Tony Parascica. So that's one you obviously look to as one where you had Peralta was batting eighth. They were going to have a pinch hitter. They hadn't really used anybody from the bench yet, so they had plenty of options to go match up. And then you turn it over to the top of the order where John Jay is. John Jay.
And he has been producing this series.
He's done really nicely. So a tough situation there. How do they salvage this? They're going up against a tough Derek Rodriguez, probably a rookie of the year candidate. He's pitched really well. Zach Godley is pitching, trying to right the ship a little bit. But how do they go ahead and try to jumpstart things here?
I mean, you just have to put these past 2 days behind you and look at this as a new day and go out there and do what you do. There's no other way. You can't dwell on it, obviously. I know that's something Torey Lovullo talks about all the time, not dwelling on it, new day stuff. But this day is going to be crucial. You got to get this win here because you don't want to go to L.A. with a three-game losing streak and the Dodgers being a little bit hot there.
Yeah, Dodgers have been playing a little bit better here. But you mentioned how all three teams as of late haven't been playing particularly well. When you looked at the Rockies going to St. Louis, a team that had been struggling, all of a sudden, St. Louis picking up a little bit of steam. They just removed their interim tag on their manager as well. And Matt Carpenter has just been hitting the lights out. So it's been they kind of ran into a buzzsaw. They've been 6-4 over their last 10 games. Arizona's 5-5. Dodgers 6-4 as well. So it seems like we say this every single time, we're closing in on the end of August.
Almost September baseball.
Going to September, and there are three teams that are gunning for this spot. So definitely going to be exciting to watch. Speaking of exciting, the Phoenix Mercury last night lost a tough one in the WNBA semifinals to the top-seeded Seattle Storm, but it was the way that they came back. With 6:11 left in that final quarter, 73-56, the Storm led. And then all of a sudden, the Mercury were able to turn it on. In the final 2 minutes, Diana Taurasi had 11 points, three three-pointers, and they hit overtime. Brittany Griner got that sixth foul, and they were not able to go ahead and pull that game out. Really tough loss for them because in both of these games, they were down by quite a bit. And Seattle, look, Seattle's a really, really good team. There's a reason they're the top-seeded team. Mm-hmm. But they were able to come back a 19-point deficit, a 16-point deficit in those first two games, but just not quite able to pull it out. But I know that you have not always been a Diana Taurasi fan, given your background, but it seems like she's starting to convert you to with the respect level a little bit.
A little background behind that. I grew up with Notre Dame women's basketball, and UConn was the rival. So that's why I haven't always been the biggest Diana Taurasi fan. But
Diana Taurasi didn't lose much at UConn.
Oh, no. And if anyone was very familiar with that, it was Notre Dame women's basketball fans.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she's just a boss out there. Mm-hmm. Like, we saw last night how she kind of ref made a call, and she was kind of like, no. And, like, I'm not messing with her. No
yeah.
way.
And even post-game, she got a technical in game one. Post-game, they asked about
that
it.
Was
and
funny.
She's like, I was trying to talk to my teammate, but apparently they thought I was going to go murder somebody. So she's got a fire to her.
She's been playing a long time. She's good.
Yeah, as does Griner. So this team definitely has an edge. They return to Phoenix for game three. This is going to be an elimination game for them on Friday. So that's going to be a fun game to watch as well. In terms of the Arizona Cardinals, they wrap up their final preseason game on Thursday night.
Finally, I'm so ready for real football.
Yeah, so this is typically the game where not many starters play. This is kind of a tune-up to see the type of depth that you have. But I think that there could be a couple of interesting storylines within this. You're looking at Greg Little, the wide receiver who, you know, on Sunday Night Football, they did a really nice feature on him week three where he was sending workout tapes to Arizona, and he was working out on Horizon High School's field. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been out of the game. He was a former second-round pick, went to UNC. He definitely had a lot of talent, but things just didn't really click for him. It seems like right now you have Larry Fitzgerald at the wide receiver position,
right.
And then everything else is pretty wide open. Christian Kirk has looked good in the preseason. Chad Williams has shown some glimpses. You'll see Jermaine Gresham, Ricky Seals-Jones at the tight end position. And then also you have Josh Rosen. Josh Rosen hasn't thrown many passes in we'll call them quote-unquote NFL games, but preseason, you can take a big grain of salt with that. But he hasn't made many passes. Are they going to try to get him some reps? And if that's the case, do you then have some of your first and second team offensive linemen go into that game
protect
as well
him.
To protect, you know, that first round pick? So that's going to be a lot of things. I'll be covering that game for Sports 360 AZ. That's tomorrow night, Thursday. So that's certainly also something to look out for. We have college football starting. U of A, you'll
that.
Be there.
I'll be done in Tucson.
You'll be in Tucson for BYU and Arizona. Arizona State hosting UTSA. Eric will be over there as
see
well.
Two new head coaches. And
yeah, two new head coaches.
Remember.
A lot of and a wide open Pac-12 South. So that'll be really fun. What are you keeping your eye on for this Arizona BYU matchup?
Obviously, quarterback Khalil Tate, Heisman. In mm-hmm. the Heisman talk, also the offensive line, because in this offseason, there's been some questions surrounding Wildcats' offensive line and how they're going to be this season, so I'm watching that. And just, I mean, first game of the season, college football being back, I'm excited to just be in the atmosphere of it.
Khalil Tate's not going to surprise anybody.
No.
Last year,
I mean, that's not going to be a surprise. I'm not expecting surprises from him, but just this 2018 team coming under Kevin Sumlin.
You saw those first couple games with Khalil Tate, specifically the Colorado game where he said, "Hey, everybody, I'm Khalil Tate. I'm going to rush for, like, 30,000 yards. But there was a bit of a surprise in the early to middle weeks of that season where it was, hey, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows who Khalil Tate is. When you're on the cover of SI, everybody knows who you are.
Comes with its curses,
For me, it's going to be, it's a really young defense, mm-hmm. but it's a young defense that has a year under their belt because a lot of freshmen, a lot of sophomores played. Colin Schooler, I feel like he got some recognition, you know, Pac-12 freshman defensive player of the year. He doesn't get enough credit. This guy is all over the place. And he's going to draw those Scooby Wright comparisons, but I still think they're a little bit different. You know, it's a little apples to oranges, but this is a linebacker that just whenever you see a gang tackle, you see his flare or his hair just flying in the wind. He's always in the middle of everything.
And BYU has a pretty good defense here too. So
yeah.
Just seeing that matchup, how these two match up defensively.
So some local ties as well. Gunnar Romney, the wide receiver from Chandler High School, is with BYU. It sounds like he could be in the mix and get potentially an early start, at least you know, be on the field. And then Jalen Harris, the former Desert Ridge defensive end, I think he's a guy that's going to make some noise in this Arizona defense. I continued to see him in high school. He was just like his younger brother, who's currently at Higley, who's a top recruit for the 2020 class, Jason Harris. They're very long, kind of lanky guys.
He's put on some bulk, though.
But yeah, Jalen has definitely bulked up, so he could be a fun guy to look out for as well early in the season. But like you said, college football's back. We now have our Fridays.
Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays.
Yep, Fridays,
Saturdays. Football.
Probably Mondays mixed in there as well. So
football never sleeps.
Yeah,
so.
A lot to get to. Coming up next, James Laurinaitis from FS1. He's going to be with ASU UTSA this week doing the broadcast, and Brad caught up with him. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmat Show.
Many of you have already had your fantasy drafts. That's really too bad when a guy like Marquise Lee goes down. To help you out on that and many other items, it's the Hall of Famer return visit with Michael Fabiano from the NFL Network, senior fantasy analyst for NFL Media, and of course, the Hall of Famer. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm terrific. It's good to hear your voice. It's good to get off and running because the amount of stuff here to get to, it's endless. So let's just get right to it. I'll get to Marquise Lee momentarily. This is a day of wide receiver news. Odell Beckham gets his big contract. Where are you at on him this year, Michael, in terms of wide receivers?
One of the three wideouts who's worth a first-round pick, including Antonio Brown and Nuke Hopkins, likely end of the first round, beginning of the second round, I think would be the latest that you'll see OBJ drafted. I will say this. I do believe that there's a little bit of risk when it comes to OBJ in terms of the touchdown department, because the Giants added some huge weapons. Let's put it that way. You've got Saquon Barkley, who is going to see his touches. You're going to be talking about anywhere between 325 to 350 for the rookie. He will be the centerpiece of this offense to go right alongside OBJ. So you may see him get down into the eight, somewhere in that area. Double digits, I don't think, is a guarantee for OBJ this season, but he's still a fantasy star.
Marquise Lee goes down, gone for the year. Guys had their drafts already. Sucks for them. What can you say about looking for replacements for Marquise Lee?
Keelan Cole would be the first guy that comes to mind. He actually was someone that I liked before Lee went down. Dede Westbrook's value is going to go up as well. Those would be the two guys that I feel like move up the most just on the Jaguars. If you're looking outside of Jacksonville, Chris Godwin is someone that has really looks good in the preseason and someone that you should target. And he'll come off the board somewhere late. And if you've had your drafts already, he could potentially be available on the waiver wire.
Hall of Famer Michael Fabiano with us from the NFL Network. Adrian Peterson causing a stir in fantasy land or not? My mailbag's full of questions for you about him so far in D.C.
It's crazy, man. Like, I thought that this was it. I thought last season we saw him play a few games, had a couple of good stat lines, but overall you can tell that he was a 33-year-old back, averaged fewer than 4 yards per carry. But all of a sudden, he looks good in one preseason game, and he saw a lot of snaps with the first-team offense, which to me means that he's got a shot to start. Now, with that being said, this is not Adrian Peterson from 8 or 10 years ago. We're talking about a guy who is clearly past his prime. He's going to be drafted now, but he shouldn't be drafted until late. And at best, he's in a committee with Chris Thompson. Rob Kelly is also still there. Samaje Perine is also still there. So I wouldn't be hanging my hat on AD, let's put it that way.
A lot of questions for you on the mailbag. I can keep two of these players as keepers in a half-point PPR league. Odell, Michael Thomas, Dalvin Cook, who's the odd man out in that group?
Boy, that's a tough one because all three of those players are extremely, I guess, keepable. I don't even know if that's a word. I would keep the two wide receivers because it's a PPR league, but I do love Dalvin Cook.
Running backs, I can keep two of three. Marshawn, Deion Lewis, Marion Mack.
See, now, in a keeper league, you want to try and retain guys who are a little bit younger than a Marshawn Lynch. You probably would have him this season, and that's it. So I'd keep Marlon Mack, keep tabs on what's going on injury-wise with him, though. But you're trying to look a little bit long-term, and I'd also keep Deion Lewis out of this trio, so Lynch would be the odd man out.
Ask Michael about the Cleveland running back situation, Carlos Hyde, Duke Johnson.
And don't forget Nick Chubb.
Nick Chubb, yeah.
Really, this is a dart thrower of your week. Carlos Hyde right now looks like the best player to draft in standard leagues. Duke Johnson in PPR. Nick Chubb is third in both. But this could end up being a week-to-week situation where Hugh Jackson rides the hot hand. So maybe 1 week it's Carlos Hyde. Maybe 1 week it's Duke Johnson. Maybe Chubb has a big week. This is a backfield to avoid unless you're drafting. Maybe Duke Johnson is an RB3, RB4. Hyde is an RB4. Chubb is probably an RB4, RB5. I feel like it's going to be confusing every single week. So avoid faded if you possibly can.
Sticking with Cleveland, a lot of questions about Josh Gordon in your view.
The talent is ridiculously just apparent. If you remember back to 2013, he missed two games, still led all wide receivers in fantasy points while catching passes from Jason Campbell, Brian Hoyer, and Brandon Whedon. So now he's got Tyrod or Tyrod Taylor, whichever way you want to pronounce that name. He's got a great offense around him. The big question mark, and it's one that no one can really answer clearly, is can he keep his head on straight for an entire season? Based on talent, I'd say he's a fifth or sixth round pick. If I knew I was going to get 14-plus games from Josh Gordon, he is locked into the fifth round, maybe even a fourth round pick. But there is that risk there, and that's something you need to remember before drafting him.
We're getting a lot of fantasy questions, Michael, about strategy as we get ready for the start of the season. Some drafts still to go. Aaron Rodgers, if you're sitting there with the 12th pick in a 12-team league, is that the spot to take the first quarterback off the board?
No. We've been doing this a long time, Brad. You know, I don't draft quarterbacks. If Aaron Rodgers is there in the fifth round, then maybe I take a chance on him. But that's as early as I'll take a quarterback. If we've learned anything about quarterbacks over the last two or three seasons, is that you can wait on the position. Last year, where was Carson Wentz drafted? Late. Where was Jared Goff drafted? Maybe not drafted at all. There, Alex Smith, not drafted at all or drafted late. You can wait on that position. And it's the same thing this season. I get it. Aaron Rodgers is great. Tom Brady is great. Russell Wilson is great. But you also have to consider supply and demand. You only have to start one quarterback in traditional leagues. You have to start two or three running backs, two or three wide receivers. So you should wait at quarterback. You can get Matthew Stafford, who is consistently a top 10 fantasy quarterback, in the 9th or 10th round. So there are leagues out there where quarterbacks score more. Obviously, you have to audible based on your scoring system. Maybe there's a league that you play two quarterbacks, a super flex league, then that changes things. But in traditional fantasy football drafts, as great as it would be to have Aaron Rodgers, I will not draft him within my first 40 to 45 picks. If he falls to the end of the fifth round, I'll take a chance on him at that point, and then I'll have to figure out later on how I replace the running back or wide receiver I would have drafted in that spot. But I just wait on the position, and it's basically become an industry trend that quarterbacks are one of the two positions that you can really wait on and still get production and still get value.
I'm, from a strategy standpoint, blow me out of the water on this, my friend, and that is I'm looking at Tyrod and Jameis Winston as my two quarterbacks in the middle rounds. Jameis isn't going to come back till, you know, what after 3 weeks, and I think he's gonna be pretty good, Michael. I could be wrong on that, and I think Tyrod's gonna start out pretty strong. So shoot me down on that one as a strategy.
Before Jameis was suspended, he was on my list of potential top 10 fantasy quarterbacks, maybe towards the back end of the top 10. If you look at the numbers that he put up last season, they were actually pretty good.
Yep.
And now you have Chris Godwin, who's got a year of experience under his belt. You've still got Mike Evans and Deshaun Jackson. You add Ronald Jones, although he's been a bit of a disappointment. You have O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate at tight end. There's talent there. So I can promise you one thing. If you want Jameis Winston, you don't want to draft him, and you probably don't have to draft him.
Right.
Well, once that week two hits, I would go and pick him up off the waiver wire, because if you wait until that third week, people are going to start grabbing him in advance of him playing the fourth Buccaneers game. So I would certainly be looking at him at some point after the first couple of weeks as a waiver wire pickup. And he will be added in almost all leagues, I can promise you.
Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, with us. Before I let you go, some draft trends that you're seeing with drafts still going on here before the start of the season. Some players moving up, some players moving down.
Well, again, the trend of waiting on a quarterback is year over year, it just continues. People are really focusing on running backs early. If you're in a 10-team league, you're probably going to see 7 or 8 running backs picked. Second round, there's a lot of wide receivers coming off the board. People are also really jumping on tight ends, Gronkowski, Travis Kelce, Zach Ertz. Those guys are going to be gone in the first 40 picks. After that, there is some good mid-round value, mm-hmm. like Greg Olsen, Jimmy Graham, Delaney Walker. And there's also a lot of upside at the back half of the top 10, guys like Trey Burton, for example, George Kittle. So if you don't draft a tight end in the earlier rounds or even in the middle rounds, there's still some exciting players at the end of your draft. I'm also seeing a lot of people, and maybe this should be how drafts happen. A lot of people are not drafting a kicker in a defense. And I get that all the time. Where should I draft a kicker? Where should I draft a defense? If your league commissioner decides you can draft whoever you want, you just have to have a starting lineup set for week one, including a kicker and a defense, I would fade those two positions, pass on them in the draft, grab a couple of other players. Who knows? Maybe you drafted a Keelan Cole instead of drafting a kicker, and all of a sudden he's the number one receiver in Jacksonville right now. You have trade bait. That's a trend that I'm certainly seeing. And also, the trend of the young running backs, and that's going to be a big time. That position is going to be big time in the top 50, where young guys like, for example, Alex Collins and Joe Mixon, Jerick McKinnon, Dalvin Cook, you're going to see these guys going higher and higher and higher. People are really elevating the value of running backs, especially the young backs. And as I mentioned, you're probably going to see 7 or 8 go in the first round. None of those guys are going to be even 27 years old. They're all 26 and younger. So we are back in the era of the fantasy running back sort of ruling the roost. And people are going to take chances on young running backs. Royce Freeman is a guy who also comes to mind, too. LaDainian Tomlinson took him in the 4th round in our NFL Celebrity Draft last week. And if LT's taken a running back whose ADP is the 5th or 6th round, if he's taken him in the 4th round, that should tell you something.
No, for sure, for sure. Good to hear your voice. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk soon.
All right, my friend. Take care.
There's Michael Fabiano with us from the NFL Network. All things around the fantasy football scene. Sports 360. AZ.com. I'm Brad Sismat. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, all sports, administrators, coaches, players. Even last week we touched on the Havocs. We have a lot of fun with this show each week. Carlos Johnson is with us today. For those of you that are like me, that are hoopaholics, that follow the basketball scene in Arizona, you know the name Carlos Johnson, even though he's here just for a short period of time. Over at Shadow Mountain, they won a state championship. He has moved around. He went up to Washington and played in the Pac-12. He's actually on the same team as Markelle Fultz. He left UW, and now he is at GCU for Dan Marley's squad. It's a huge pickup for them. And even though, full disclosure, he's not going to play this season, it's one of those where he's sitting out. They just got back from a trip to the Bahamas, GCU's tour there, and he played very well, 34 points in 21 minutes of action. Carlos Johnson, this week in Talk to the Lopes. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Just at home cleaning up a little bit.
Is the place a mess?
Nah, not right now.
No, no. Does it ever get trashed out? I mean, Dirty dishes?
Never.
No. You've grown out of that.
Only when my mom cooks.
And there's nothing wrong with that. All right, let's get right down to this. You were at Shadow. You won a state title. You moved around. You go to UW, now GCU. If you were to put the last 5 years down on paper, how would you write it out to explain what you've been through?
It's been a journey, I would say, but it's one if I had to go through it again, I would. I wouldn't change nothing because I feel like all that ended up with me being here, and I feel like this is a great position for me to be in.
So let's start at Shadow. You played there. You won a state title. That was a team that was loaded, as most Shadow Mountain teams were. Tell me about your Shadow Mountain experience, and then why did you leave?
Oh, man. Shadow was fun. It was good for 2 years. I decided to leave because I seen an opportunity elsewhere, and I had to chase my dreams, and, you know, I just had to do what was best for me and my family.
Okay, and then you go to UW. Let's go through the recruiting process and how that worked out for you, Carlos.
Well, to start off, I was committed to UNLV, and then the coach got fired there, and then I was just decommitted, and I didn't have nowhere to go, and UW was one of the first schools that offered me. And I took a visit there, got real close with the coaching staff, with Romar and Coach Conroy, and just built a relationship with them, and that's what made me go there.
And then Lorenzo leaves after a long, long run, widely, highly respected coach, and Coach Hopkins comes in. Before we get into the Coach Hopkins run, you played with Markel Fultz on the same team. If you could talk about that a little bit and how he helped you. If he didn't help you, it's fine, but how did playing with Markel Fultz help develop you?
Just learning from him every day. You know, he was one of those leaders. Like, even though I was older than him, he always kind of led, and we always, you know, kind of fed off each other's energy because we lived with each other through the whole year. So we just always took little things from each other. Like, he's crafty with the ball, so I was learning some things from him with the ball, and, you know, how to score at a higher level and keep focused. That's what he, you know, tried to tell me now.
Okay, so he's there. He helps you out. He leaves. Lorenzo Romar leaves, which really shook the program. Coach Hopkins comes in. Last season, just walk me through last season. When did you decide, you know what, I might need to go elsewhere?
I mean, usually, like, when you're in college, you, like, get a feel. And, like, Coach, he ran with a 7-man rotation, so I wasn't in that rotation. There was no bad blood. He just told me, like, maybe your dreams won't come true here, but maybe elsewhere, and he was going to support me anywhere I went. So I respected that, and he let me go.
And so you had a good dialogue with him. That leads you to, okay, I'm going to leave. Why GCU? Your relationship with Dan Marley, from my understanding, went back a ways, so you were familiar with him. But why GCU? I mean, Lorenzo's over at Pepperdine. I'm sure that could have been an option for you, but why GCU?
I wanted to come home and, like, just – I call Arizona home for a lot of reasons because this is where I really first started, like, playing basketball seriously and taking it serious. So I wanted to come home and get the love that I felt when I was here. And, you know, that's what I think I was kind of missing, because when I set out, I kind of, like, was just like, man, maybe do I want to do this? So when I made the decision to come back home, I felt like it was the right decision, and I just felt more comfortable with this decision.
Carlos, if you could walk fans through what that's like, because they may not know, when a player comes to the realization of, I'm not going to be here, I'm going to transfer, do you reach out to Dan Marley? Do you reach out to TJ Benson? Who did you reach out to let them know, hey, I may be looking to come home?
Well, for me, I think I went through when I got my release, like, everyone, I think it kind of goes, like, through, like, a transfer wire, so I think a lot of coaches knew, and then I got, like, good close friends on GCU, so it wasn't that hard.
Wasn't that hard for them? And if you could talk about the relationship of Dan Marley and learning from an NBA player and what that will be for you.
Oh, man, it helps me because I like playing really hard, and that's the thing, like, he, like, really preaches, like, it doesn't matter if you mess up. Just as long as you play hard and give it all you got, you good with him. So I feel like that. I just pride myself on that, and that's those two things together go real good.
Yeah, and Dan, when he played, obviously played hard, and he coaches hard, and the team's made big progress. What do you see so far? I know it's been a short period of time that you've been with the team. You guys just came back from the Bahamas. What do you see about this year's team? I know you've got to sit and watch, but what do you see out of the team?
Oh, man, we got a lot of big guards, and we're just going to get after it. We're just going to be, I think, a tenacious team.
A tenacious team, could you give some an idea of what it was like in the Bahamas getting back on the court and with this team and how they've looked and how you guys worked together?
It was at first it was kind of bumpy because we was trying to get the hang of each other, but once we clicked and got the ball rolling, it was real easy. We kind of knew each other's sweet spots already and, you know, how to play with each other.
Mm-hmm. Good
and
stuff.
And I think the more that the boys play with each other and, you know, against different competition, it's just going to look better.
School, tell me about school and what are you interested in pursuing academically at GCU?
Well, right now I'm majoring in communication, so I want to take that as far as I can. Apply that to my everyday life.
So you want to take my job is what you're saying? You want to do
that? Yeah, something like that.
Get behind a microphone and do your thing. Well, it's great that you're back in the Valley, and I think, you know, Shadow themselves, they're still really strong, as you know, so we'll be out of games this year, and we'll see you over at GCU. Appreciate the visit. Good luck to you. I appreciate you coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Sure. There's Carlos Johnson, and that is this week's Talk to the Lopes. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University athletics, all sports, administrators, coaches, players. Even last week we touched on the Havocs. We have a lot of fun with this show each week. Carlos Johnson is with us today. For those of you that are like me, that are hoopaholics, that follow the basketball scene in Arizona, you know the name Carlos Johnson, even though he's here just for a short period of time, over at Shadow Mountain. They won a state championship. He has moved around. He went up to Washington and played in the Pac-12. He's actually on the same team as Markelle Fultz. He left UW, and now he is at GCU for Dan Marley's squad. It's a huge pickup for them. And even though, full disclosure, he's not going to play this season, it's one of those where he's sitting out. They just got back from a trip to the Bahamas, GCU's tour there, and he played very well, 34 points in 21 minutes of action. Carlos Johnson this week in Talk to the Lopes. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Just at home cleaning up a little bit.
Is the place a mess?
Nah, not right now.
No. Does it ever get trashed out? I mean, dirty dishes?
Never.
No. You've grown out of that.
Only when my mom cooks.
There's nothing wrong with that. All right, let's get right down to this. You were at Shadow. You won a state title. You moved around. You go to UW, now GCU. If you were to put the last 5 years down on paper, how would you write it out to explain what you've been through?
It's been a journey, I would say. But it's one if I had to go through it again, I would. I wouldn't change nothing because I feel like all that ended up with me being here. And I feel like this is a great position for me to be in.
So let's start at Shadow. You played there. You won a state title. That was a team that was loaded, as most Shadow Mountain teams were. Tell me about your Shadow Mountain experience, and then why did you leave?
Oh, man. Shadow was fun. It was good for 2 years. I decided to leave because I seen an opportunity elsewhere, and I had to chase my dreams, and, you know, I just had to do what was best for me and my family.
Okay, and then you go to UW. Let's go through the recruiting process and how that worked out for you, Carlos.
Well, to start off, I was committed to UNLV, and then the coach got fired there, and then I decommitted, and I didn't have nowhere to go, and UW was one of the first schools that offered me, and I took a visit there, got real close with the coaching staff, with Romar and Coach Conroy, and just built a relationship with them, and that's what made me go there.
And then Lorenzo leaves after a long, long run, widely, highly respected coach, and Coach Hopkins comes in. Before we get into the Coach Hopkins run, you played with Markelle Fultz on the same team. If you can talk about that a little bit and how he helped you. If he didn't help you, it's fine, but how did playing with Markelle Fultz help develop you?
Just learning from him every day. You know, he was one of those leaders. Like, even though I was older than him, he always kind of led, and we always, you know, kind of fed off each other's energy because we lived with each other through the whole year. So we just always took little things from each other. Like, he's crafty with the ball, so I've learned some things from him with the ball and, you know, how to score at a higher level and keep focused. That's what he, you know, tried to tell me now.
Okay, so he's there. He helps you out. He leaves. Lorenzo Romar leaves, which really shook the program. Coach Hopkins comes in. Last season, just walk me through last season. When did you decide, you know what, I might need to go elsewhere?
I mean, usually, like, when you're in college, you, like, get a feel. And, like, Coach, he ran with a seven-man rotation, so I wasn't in that rotation. There was no bad blood. He just told me, like, maybe your dreams won't come true here, but maybe elsewhere, and he was going to support me anywhere I went. So I respected that, and he let me go.
And so you had a good dialogue with him. That leads you to, okay, I'm going to leave. Why GCU, your relationship with Dan Marley, from my understanding, went back a ways. So you were familiar with him. But why GCU? I mean, Lorenzo's over at Pepperdine. I'm sure that could have been an option for you. But why GCU?
I wanted to come home and, like, just – I call Arizona home for a lot of reasons because this is where I really first started, like, playing basketball seriously and taking it serious. So I wanted to come home and get the love that I felt when I was here. And, you know, that's what I think I was kind of missing, because when I set out, I kind of like was just like, man, maybe do I want to do this? So when I made the decision to come back home, I felt like it was the right decision. And I just felt more comfortable with this decision.
Carlos, if you could walk fans through what that's like, because they may not know, when a player comes to the realization of, I'm not going to be here, I'm going to transfer, do you reach out to Dan Marley? Do you reach out to TJ Benson? Who did you reach out to let them know, hey, I may be looking to come home?
Well, for me, I think I went through like a, like when I got my release, like everyone, I think it kind of goes like through like a transfer wire. So I think a lot of coaches knew, and then I got like good close friends on GCU. So it wasn't that hard.
Wasn't that hard for them? And if you could talk about the relationship of Dan Marley and learning from an NBA player and what that will be for you.
Oh, man, it helps me because I like playing really hard, and that's the thing, like, he, like, really preaches, like, it doesn't matter if you mess up, just as long as you play hard and give it all you got, you good with him. So I feel like that I just pride myself on that, and those two things together go real good.
Yeah, and Dan, when he played, obviously played hard, and he coaches hard, and the team's made big progress. What do you see so far? I know it's been a short period of time that you've been with the team. You guys just came back from the Bahamas. What do you see about this year's team? I know you've got to sit and watch, but what do you see out of the team?
Oh, man, we got a lot of big guards, and we're just going to get after it. We're just going to be, I think, a tenacious team.
A tenacious team, could you give some an idea of what it was like in the Bahamas getting back on the court and with this team and how they looked and how you guys worked together?
It was at first it was kind of bumpy because we was trying to get the hang of each other, but once we clicked and got the ball rolling, it was real easy. We kind of knew each other's sweet spots already and, you know, how to play with each other.
Mm-hmm. Good
and
stuff.
And I think the more that the boys play with each other and, you know, against different competition, it's just going to look better.
School, tell me about school and what are you interested in pursuing academically at GCU?
Well, right now I'm majoring in communication, so I want to take that as far as I can. Apply that to my everyday life.
So you want to take my job is what you're saying? You want to do
that? Yeah, something like that.
Get behind a microphone and do your thing. Well, it's great that you're back in the Valley, and I think, you know, Shadow themselves, they're still really strong, as you know, so we'll be out of games this year, and we'll see you over at GCU. Appreciate the visit. Good luck to you. I appreciate you coming on.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Sure. There's Carlos Johnson, and that is this week's Talk to the Lopes.